Welcome, everybody, to the Lunch and Learn for this week, Parshas Vayetze. The year is Tavshin Samach Vav, 5766, and a very, very warm welcome to my dear parents, Chazan and Mrs. Goldberger, who are visiting for Shabbos and for Sunday. It's a pleasure having you here. The truth of the matter is that the subject of this week's Parsha is totally and almost divinely suited for a visit by my parents. Of course, there's always many factors at play, but Hashem has a way of bringing events and people together at certain moments. And I hope that the subject of this class will be meaningful to them as it is to me, being in their presence and speaking about this topic. Because the topic of Vayetze is really the beginning of the expansion of the Jewish people from the phase of the Avos, of the forefathers, which are synonymous with foremothers, as we have explained, and the Bunim, the children, as in the 12 sons of Yaakov. 11 of the 12, their birth is recorded in Parshas Vayetze, they are all named, and this is really the beginning of how the Jewish people go from the father stage to the child stage. And it creates all kinds of insights and implications into A, the structure of the Jewish people, and B, the relationships between parents and children. What really is the essential difference between an Av and a Ben? What's the difference between, let's say, an Avraham, Yitzchak, and a Yaakov, who are infinitely immeasurable in their greatness, and Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, for example, their children, who are also infinitely immeasurable? Why did the Av stage end at this point, and then it became the Ben stage, if you will, the child stage? What is the difference between an Av and a Ben? Why didn't Hashem decide that there should be four Avos, and then start the Banim? Why was it Yaakov, who was the last of the fathers, and then his children became the new generation of the new era, the era of the Banim? This is certainly a fundamental discussion, and I only try to shed a little light on it. One basic concept which is basic to Torah and to Yiddishkeit is the concept of yichud, of unity, of everything coming from one single point. The yichud of Hashem. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem is one. It means not only is there only one God and not other gods, but it means that everything comes from that one. Everything is a creation of His and thereby a small component of Him, however we understand that. The concept of everything coming from a central core, this is basic to understanding Yiddishkeit in the world. Just as the world itself, the physical world, are all creations of God, Rashi teaches us that really God created the entire world with one word. And then through the 6 days of creation, things just came into actualization. Whatever that means. Like the whole world was under the level of the earth, and then on day two, this came out. On day three, this came out. On day four, that came out. But really, it was all from that Big Bang. Other ideas where we see the concept of everything emanating from one. Adam Harishon, the first man, was just one single person. And out of him came all of mankind. When the world was destroyed, there was Noah. Out of Noah came all of the nations, the three children, and then the 70 nations, and so forth. We always have to think about how things are interrelated because they come from their source. The Torah is very much like that. Ever wonder why there seem to be so many connections in the Torah? We're always saying, oh yes, this reminds me of that, and this is related to that. When we learn Talmudic study, this disagreement is really based on another disagreement, which is more fundamental. We're always looking for the connection because everything is connected. We learned last year, Rabbi Yerucham says, you can't do in critical analysis with other literature what you can do with Torah, because there's no inherent unity of the material. Only the Torah, which is really from one, from the source of oneness, can be interrelated like that. So what does that imply? The fact that everything is related and there's concentric circles being built around smaller ones. What that implies is that if you have different layers, one layer happens to be wider and more spread out, but it's really contained within the layer that preceded it. For example, if we have three avos, three forefathers, each one contributing a certain attribute, like we've discussed before. In the case of Abraham, chesed, kindness. For Yitzchak, gevura, strength. And emes, for Yaakov, truth, for Yaakov. And then the next layer down, you have 12 offshoots. So somehow these 12 are just an expansion of the three. Somehow, whatever attributes are embodied in these 12 tribes are somehow further detailed expressions or compartments of the three major attributes. The chesed, the gevura, and the emes somehow contains everything else.
We have three avos and four imachos. 3 times 4 is 12.
But there's a unit, av and aim, together. They're not separate. There's only three. Reason why we don't say the God of Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Valea is because they're not separate entities. They're really part and parcel of the three avos. I don't think of them as different numbers.
But that unifies all but, the yeah. numbers together that way. 3 times 4 is 12.
Okay, now that you mention it, I will tell you some beautiful, beautiful idea that I heard from Rabbi Rosenbaum many years ago. And this is just fantastic. We are called Israel, Yisrael, children of Israel. Israel was the second name given to Yaakov. Look at the letters Yisrael. Yud, Yaakov, Yitzchak. Sin, Sarah. Resh, Rachel, Rivka. Aleph, Avraham. Lamed, Leah. How's that?
Wow, that's amazing.
Isn't that amazing? How is that for showing that the Avos are contained within Yisrael? This is a basic concept of how things are coming from a unified single point. Actually, there are commentaries well known that say that in a certain sense, Yaakov is the composite of Abraham and Yitzchak. There's an expression in the Chazal that Yaakov was the Bechir Shebeavos, was the choicest of the fathers. How could that be? If not for Abraham and Yitzchak, there wouldn't be a Yaakov. How could he be given more credit? Because his Midah, Emes, what is Emes? What is truth? It is the correct integration of the other Midos. Just knowing exactly the right amount of chesed and gevura and integrating it in the right measure. That's MS. Truth. Truth is really the manager, the controls of everything. The events in this parsha describe in great detail how Yaakov went to Lavan and he had a great negotiations and a lot of difficult existence under Lavan because Lavan was such a cheating person, a deceitful person. He was deceived regarding his wives. He was threatened with regarding his children. And this is what enabled Yaakov to develop in full force his midah, his attribute of emes, having to fight against such sheker, such falsehood that was expressed by Lavan. And it's not a coincidence. And I have another book which I read this week, which says that the most important quality that a parent can give to a child, of all of the big ones, you know, saying please and thank you, making your bed, pushing the chair in, the most important thing that a parent can teach the children is emes, honesty, being honest. This is what I read in the Sefer. I'm sure you can intuit it. And so it's no coincidence that Yaakov, having mastered the emes, which is the integration of all, is now the Av that is ready to father the children, the Yud Beis Shevatim, the 12 tribes, which are the next layer of the expansion, the growing of the Jewish people. And everything is going to come from them. Each subsequent generation will be somehow an extension of one of the branches of the tribes. Now, if you're like me, you're very curious to know, well, what are their unique qualities? Is there such a thing as a quality for each tribe? And how are these qualities branches of the three-legged stool of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? I don't have a complete answer to this, but I do know that this is addressed in the Midrash. It's not clear. It's kind of difficult for me to understand it, but it does list a number of qualities of these tribes. The Chumash itself does. When Yaakov is on his deathbed, he issues a blessing to each of his sons. So there's a lot of insight into that about what their role is, what their quality is. But also, the Midrash is on the Parsha dealing with the formation of the Jewish camp, where they were arranged in a certain formation. The Mishkan was in the middle, and each tribe had a specific position where he had to be. And the tribe had to live together as a family. And there the Midrash talks about what each tribe, their role, and why they have the neighbors that they have. So, for example, Yehuda has the quality of Malucha, kingship, which is a religious type of leadership, which is a very unique strength. Yisachar who was his neighbor, embodied the wisdom of Torah learning. Zevulun, interestingly enough, who had the monopoly on wealth, and that was the partner of Torah, because Torah needs support, and leadership needs to be based on Torah. And so those three created a unit which camped on a certain side of the Mishkan. So each one, the next level is described as, this one it gets a little bit fuzzier as we go down for me, but Reuven taught the world about Teshuvah because he had committed some errors and he repented for them. Gad was strong, able to go out to war, and Shimon was somebody that had also some sins and he needed the protection of the Teshuvah and the war. So it's a little fuzzy, but the idea is that yes, the Shvatim have each a quality, and the qualities are essential in how they interplay. And the point for all of us is that the Jewish people, because we come from a source, we come from a unified whole, and we are branches of the same tree, it is important for us to recognize that we each have important qualities, individually and as families and as tribes, and that we must work to complement each other. And that is where we have the strength. Our strength comes from Achdus. Achdus is not merely, unity is not merely getting along. It's much, much more than that. It is recognition that each of us has a role to play and we depend on each other. I was reading again in another contemporary book by Rabbi Akiva Tatz, who's a wonderful contemporary author, and he really speaks about this idea. Let me read to you a paragraph or two. The Jewish people constitute a system built on the third type of order. He's talking about order. Each individual is essential and unique. You are absolutely necessary for the cosmic purpose which the Jewish nation must manifest. You are essential. The future of the entire Jewish nation depends on you. In that sense, you are great beyond description. But when you are not fulfilling your destiny as part of that great and historic reality, which is the Jewish people, you are lost and insignificant. And he also goes on to say how emotionally we are very much in tune with this concept, that each have a unique and unduplicatable role, and that is very thrilling to know that you're unique, but it's only thrilling when we realize that we're part of a bigger whole. He gives a lot of examples. He talks about on a sports field, there's a great thrill to be the star, right? There's a great thrill in being the loner, entirely independent and in no need of any outside assistance. This is the thrill of being a world unto yourself. However, it is also a clear feature of human consciousness that we thrill to experiences in which the individual parts blend harmoniously in such a way that the parts become locked into the whole and lose their separate identity. A mass display of precision gymnastics in which no individual stands out, but the entire human mass seems to function as one being, for example, evokes a special feeling in both the participants and the onlookers. Certain team sports, which depend on perfect interaction between members of the team, provide a unique thrill. In such activities, if one member were to make a small move expressing his particular individual existence, breaking the tight discipline of the team, the entire experience would be destroyed. So even emotionally, we identify with this, that there's something right, there's something harmonious when we're all playing our unique role as part of a larger team. And that's really the definition of the Jewish nation. And because it is so clearly defined what our purpose is, we have to study to find out what it is, but it is clearly defined how we have a special mission in the world, and we do have a very, very specific guidebook, and we are under the supervision of the master, and so forth. It is something very, very powerful and breathtaking to think about the concept of nationhood. To bring it all back, one dimension of avos and banim, of parents and children in the Jewish context, is the idea that the avos together create the all-inclusive foundation. The banim, the children, branch out, each one developing a unique attribute, but in a compartment of something which is part of the whole played by the avos. See, the children, they may have been great, but they didn't introduce anything new to the foundation. It was just a new branch. Hashem decided that after the three main attributes, the foundation was complete. From here on in, what we need is to create the branches of that, but not to create any more of a foundation. Now, part two. This week, I had a question. It was very puzzling to me, very perplexing. I even shared it with the Rebbe who teaches this Parsha in the Torah Day School, Rabbi Mordechai Cohen. I asked him this question and he said, wow, I never thought of that question. And I was thinking about it, and like most things, I can tell you an idea that I have. I don't know if it's the answer or if it's an answer, but something which stood out. Let's talk about names. Let's talk about the names of the sons. Because all the names, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, and so forth, are taught in this Parsha. And who gave the names?
The mama.
The mothers. I think, I'm not sure, all of them.
Levi was not.
Levi was named by the father?
Either the father or Hashem.
Or Hashem. Okay, thank you. Let's see where it is. Binyamin was born in Parshas Vayishlach. We all know the story that Yaakov had initially negotiated to marry Rachel, but Lavan switched, presented Leah. Her face was covered. He wasn't aware of it. Rachel, being the righteous and kind person that she was, did not want Leah to be embarrassed. And so, although she and Yaakov had made up a password just in case Lavan would try something like this, Rachel went and told the password to Leah so that she would be able to go by unnoticed and would not be embarrassed. Actually, the Torah says that although Yaakov loved both of his wives, but he loved Rachel more, Leah felt, therefore, that she was snua, which is translated as humiliated. Hated is a very strong word. She didn't feel that she was hated. She felt that she was not loved as much. And so the Torah says that she was heartbroken and she beseeched God. Hashem saw that Leah was unloved, so he opened her womb. Rachel remained barren. Leah was the first to conceive and bear a son. She called his name Reuven. Now, let's stop for a minute and think of our own experiences naming. I had always assumed that you'd pick a name that you wish to project a certain personality, a certain character trait on the child. And you either pick the name of a famous person, biblical person, or a Talmudic person to give to that child, so that child will become that. Or it may be a name that's based on a midah, like Simcha, or Joy, or Chaim, life, some type of a quality, which creates the name Bracha, blessing. But it's really based on the child. That's what I had always assumed. I've named my children too, but I would assume that the concept is the name has a lot to do with the person. And so you pick a name that'll match the person, and hopefully the person will match the name. But listen to the way that the mothers chose the names for their children. But Tikrashmo Reuven, she called his name Reuven. Why? Ki Amra, because she said, Ki Ro'a Hashem Bioni, Ki Ato Ye'ehovani Ishi. As she had declared, because Hashem has discerned my humiliation. For now my husband will love me. So Reuven comes from the word Ru'u, he saw, and he gave me a bane, he gave me a son. Hashem saw my state, he answered my plea, he saw that I felt unloved, and Hashem answered me, thank you Hashem, you've given me favor in the eyes of my husband now, so I'm going to take that name, I'm going to express my feeling, and slap it onto the child here. And he should be known as the son who made his mother feel better when she felt that her husband didn't love her enough. That would be like saying a father was always trying to make the team, but he could never make it. And finally, right before his wife gave birth to their first child, he made the team, and so he called his son Team, or Tennis, to express how his feelings were consoled. What's that got to do with the child? That's an emotional expression of the mother. Why are you burdening the child with the mother's problems? And the next one, Shimon. Ki shama Hashem, ki snua anochi. Shimon, from the word shama, Hashem heard that I was unloved. So he gave me also this son. Now I've got 2 points over my sister. Another son, Vatomer. She said, Hapam yilove ishi elai. This time my husband will become attached to me. Because I only have 2 hands. Can't carry 3 children. That's what the commentaries say. So, therefore, he called his name Levi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose the name. But she inspired it. I mean, it was her thought about Yilaveh, a company. And so Levi comes from Yilaveh. And the fourth one, Yehuda. Hapam Ode Es Hashem. This time, let me gratefully praise Hashem. Because now I have more than my share. I have 4 out of 12. I have 1/3 of the sons. And there's only going to be 12. And there's 4 mothers. So this time, let me really thank Hashem. So the children grow up, and they say, what's your name? Hashem saw my mother's pain. That's my name. Hashem heard my mother's prayer. My father now spends more time with my mother. My name is Levi. My mother says thank you. My name is Yehuda. Why is that the basis for naming a child? To give the question a little more credibility, there is a Gemara that talks about names, and it seems to give a different interpretation than the ones that are given in the Chumash. Rabbi Elazar said, by naming him Reuven, Leah prophetically said, see the difference between my son and the son of my father-in-law. That is Isaac's son, Esav. Re'u ben, see, not in terms of Hashem seeing, but look, behold, anyone will see the difference between my son, Reuven, and Esav. Look at the difference between the different sides of the family. Now, that makes a little more sense. I mean, there you're talking about the quality of the child. That's an alternate interpretation than the one that's given in the Chumash. So I say, that's more like it. Why isn't that the format? Why isn't that the basis for a naming? Something having to do with the child. So I've been walking around with this question for a few days. And in the merit of you all here and our class, I have a thought. And I would like to present it to you for your approval or disapproval. This is another dimension in parents and children, I think. We've talked about the dimension of you don't know if that means that, in an obvious sense, that means that the child inherited certain qualities from the parents, certain talents, certain mannerisms, either by birth or by environment, certainly. But that's the obvious way. But you don't even know if it's just that. There may be much, much more at work here. There's a concept of zchus avos, the merit of the parents. Because of something that the parents endured in their life, because of a certain situation, a difficult situation perhaps, or the way they reacted to a certain situation, or a test that they overcame. They merited a child in that format. For example, Gemara states somewhere that because Rachel gave the simonim, the signs, to Leah, which was a tremendous act of self-effacement, and the Gemara calls actually tznius, modesty in the sense that she was putting aside her own feelings and thinking more about the feelings of Leah. And by the way, Rachel didn't know, this is amazing, Rachel didn't know at the moment that Leah went to the chuppah that she was going to marry Yaakov subsequently. She didn't know that.
Why?
Who said that Lavan would give Rachel? Who said that God had destined that Yaakov should have two wives? Maybe he was only going to have one. And if it wasn't Rachel, it was going to be Leah. Rachel was willing to give up the opportunity of being a matriarch. In her mind, that was it. I'm giving up everything so that my sister won't be embarrassed.
Oh, you mean she
didn't know she was going to marry Yaakov. So anyway, it's a tremendous act. There's a song, a beautiful song that's come out recently about a Mama Rachel. It'll bring you to tears to hear the words and the music. But the Gemara says in the merit of her tznius, whatever character went into that act, she was zocha to King Saul and Mordechai and Esther. So generations down the road, children are becoming who they are. Why? Because of something that the parents did. Some zechus, some merit. And that's what made the children who they were. They didn't just come out of nowhere. And so what the Torah is telling you is there's different aspects to a name because there's different aspects to a person's identity. And the foremost that the Chumash uses is the fact that the mother, the parent, underwent some trying situations in her life. Here she was married and she felt that she was second fiddle. She didn't have the love, and who knows what that would mean for her children, what kind of disadvantages would they have in the family. And she beseeched herself to God, and she tried everything to endear herself to her husband, and she felt that Hashem answered her tefillos. No question that Leah rose higher and higher in her own spiritual relationship with God through this ordeal, and out of that came her children. These children were not born in a vacuum. When we look at these qualities, Reuven had the quality of Teshuvah, and Yehuda the Melech, where did it come from? Why Yehuda? Why did Yehuda get Melucha? Why did Yisachar have Torah? It all comes from the parents in a way that may not even be logical or explainable. But Leah says, my heart and soul went into having these children. I prayed to God. God saw my suffering. And out of this was born a Reuven. And yes, there also is important to identify Reuven's strengths and to give credit, so to speak, to Reuven on his own merit as the Gemara's rendition. But what's foremost? Where do children come from? Children come from the parents. That's the deeper dimension, I think, of this structure, this unified structure of generations, is that everything comes, is built upon not only the qualities, the midos of, but the merits of. And who knows, a tear shed at the right time, a prayer, a standing up for what one believes in. The earlier generations were different than later generations. Jews in America had to put up with much more trying circumstances in terms of remaining religious, and we all know, and the tremendous sacrifice that went in. And today you could say that there's more of a development in terms of education and Torah study and so on and so forth. Where did that come from? It came because mothers and fathers said, we're not going to work on Shabbos. Or because the mother cried and said, why do we have to leave our homeland and come to this desert, to this wasteland? It was, that's where the children came from. That's where all of this that you see today, that's where the outreach movement, the Baal Teshuvah movement, it came because of the parents, maybe not even the parents, maybe it was the grandparents, maybe it was the great-grandparents. That's what made the children who they were. So that, to me, is the message of the naming here, that the children are directly born out of the parents in a spiritual way, in a way that goes beyond the surface that we cannot see. And we should just realize, as the generations go on, how really interconnected we are, not just on the same level, but also from levels up and down as well. That's my idea. You can think about it, and have a wonderful Shabbos.
Shikor.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.